Previously on Behind the Panels.
If you don't listen to GMC, the one thing we want you to go hunt down between now and next week when we come back, and we want to hear your thoughts on it, is the Polish entry this year. All I'm going to say is churn that butter, girls. Churn that butter. Until next week.
Next week.
You've got to get me over that mouth!
Come with me if you want to live.
If you want to fight, Eric,
I will
down.
Give you a fight!
You abandoned me! You took her away and you abandoned me!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat!
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome back to Behind the Panels, issue 98, the comic book show that's just the right size. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
Yes, he is. In this issue, prepare for some Pulp Fiction as Marvel teams up with the Florida Department of Citrus. That's a true story. Then Grant Morrison enters a contest for the longest title of a DC comic as The Multiversity, the Society of Superheroes, Conquerors of the Counterworld is revealed. Also, it's Original Sin and more in what we've been reading, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot by Frank Miller and Jeff Darrow. This is Behind the Panels. We're back, baby.
Don't call.
Ah, yeah, boys. We're back.
We are back. It's been a while.
It has been a month.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
All stained.
It's been a month. It was May 12th was the last time a show came out. So we.
Well, here. To be fair, we did squeeze a GMC in there. But
that's true. Yeah. That sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it? Behind the Panels, squeezing in a GMC.
Or squeezing out a GMC, as the case might be.
Yeah, listen to the show. You'll get that. We've been busy. Obviously, we were getting over mountains. And fighting mutants. That's what happened.
That was an awesome opening, by the way. You had far too much free time.
I put more effort into that.
It took him a whole month. They were away.
That's why we've been away, having adventures.
Richard listened to 97 shows to compile.
I did.
That.
Wow, did we really fight off a mutant invasion in there somewhere? I remember that, taking down a tower from German terrorists.
Yeah.
That was in the 80s, though.
That was in the negative numbers.
We weren't officially a show at that stage. No. We were just sitting around.
Good thing we had a tape recorder, though. So.
It was good. What have you all been up to?
Oh, a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of reading. We've got holidays
boring
coming up.
No, sorry.
Got holidays
we
coming
are.
Up.
Look, we'll give a shout out because there will be another break coming up. There'll be a week off.
The whole audience just went, what?
It'll only be a week off, but we'll be getting material for a bunch of shows down there.
Well, Oz Comic Con. So
we're going to Oz Comic Con. So Melbourne people, or if you're in Melbourne, come and say hi. And we'll put it out here right now, that we're playing a fortune in music rights for this episode. We're going to be the Alien screening that's at the Astor Theatre on the Friday, the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. We will be there dressed in American flag. No, we will be there because Tom Skerritt is going to be there.
Richard's going to be on the car ride. Yeah,
don't worry. Richard will be exploding out of Dave's chest. I'm sure.
or if I get really excited, just onto it.
Oh dear.
Should we do this thing that I?
We should. We should very quickly mention though that we are going to try and organize a meetup.
Yep.
Around that weekend, the Saturday probably. Yeah. Or if you're coming to the Alien thing at the Astor Theatre. We'll
do
something as well.
We want to do a couple of things. We want to catch up with a bunch of like professional contacts as well.
Yeah.
So we'll do one of those. But if you're a fan, you listen to the show, or you just want to come, I've had at least one person say, I just want to come up and shake your hand and say hi. And yeah, totally. That's what we're down there for.
So please contact us if you want to. We're going to try and set up. We might use. I found a new app, by the way, called Meetup, which is kind of a neat little thing. You can actually create meetups. And you join the meetup groups and stuff like that. So I thought we might see if we can make this work.
So
for
if you
us.
Don't have friends, there's an app for that. good to know. I thought that was Grindr. I mean, sorry. Just you know what we haven't done for a while?
What's that?
This.
course not. I just wanted him to think I was.
I always knew Magneto didn't really win that fight.
Oh, yeah, wise guy? Prove it.
Even though Magneto seemed more powerful, he was missing the most important quality any leader must possess.
Knock off the speech-making and get to the point, Shorty.
What quality was Magneto missing, Herbie?
The most valuable of all. The reason he could never beat Reed Richards. Every leader must have something more than strength. He must have the quality of wisdom.
I have an idea. A new disco opened up downstairs.
Oh, and you want to complain about the noise?
No, silly. I want to go dancing.
Terrific. I thought you'd never ask. Yeah, they're leaving me alone with Herbie.
Don't be jealous, Benjamin. I can learn to dance.
Sorry, Rattlehead. You ain't my type, you know? In fact, even if you was my type, you wouldn't be my type.
Don't take this personally, but even Magneto was more fun than you.
Good Lord.
Yeah, well, we were doing robots this week, so I thought, who's a famous comic book robot?
Let's throw this out to the floor here. I've got a question. Why was Herbie created? Was it because they couldn't figure out how to animate the Human Torch?
Probably,
because
yeah.
They took a Human Torch out and put Herbie in as the fourth. Why was Herbie ever put into this thing?
Yeah, I don't know. It's, Herbie was hot right then in the late 70s.
Late 70s, everybody wanted a robot.
Yeah.
R2-D2. Yeah.
The love bug, right?
Yeah, that series was 78. So yeah, you're right. He's probably the R2 of the series. Yeah.
It's like, remember the G-Force?
Yeah.
For the American release of that, they inserted a robot who has a little round head and looks a little bit like an R2 unit. So...
Well, as I always
That's
say,
probably the first time G-Force has ever been referenced.
G-Force!
The robots looked almost identical. The G-Force robot and Herbie weren't that dissimilar.
No, well, that was the thing. That was the look, the little stumpy robot.
Yeah.
You know? So,
And also there was that series Mask. Remember Mask?
Yes.
And that had a little robot that actually turned into a motorbike.
And the black hole had the little floating robots.
Ah, there you go.
We're seeing a trend.
No, I'm definitely seeing a trend there.
The whole audience at this point is going, are you guys stupid? Of course there was a trend.
Short circuit.
Disassemble.
Johnny 5 is a lie. No, that was the sequel, Short Circuit 2.
Input.
Input. You know...
Nice software.
Next week on Behind the Panel.
Oh, dear. I think I need a sound clip to save us at this point.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Oh, so many lines.
I miss that
bitches.
So much.
Oh, you have no idea how much I've missed this show, full stop. But, you know... Young girls that just don't know what to do, so they break your heart.
Go back and listen to the last GMT.
And I just inadvertently quoted Timmy Rogers, so who knows what's going on here. I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of things I've been reading. First of all, I read, it's a few years old now, at least the paperback edition came out last year, is the Marvel The Untold Story. I'm reading this at the moment, and this is basically Marvel before it was Marvel, all the way through to about 2012, 2013. It is a fascinating read. If you have any interest whatsoever in the history of the comic books industry and the history of the modern comic books history, and basically how Marvel, you know, really just built themselves from the ground up and you know, grabbed onto a wave that was happening and led it. This is the book, and just all the behind-the-scenes stuff about what was happening with the creators, because there's a news story a little bit later we mention about the estate of Jack Kirby, still working stuff out with Marvel about rights and stuff, how all that sort of came to be as well. So fascinating read. You can get this as an audiobook on Audible and stuff like that as well. So if you prefer to listen to things, which we know you do because you're listening to a podcast.
Absolutely.
Another way of doing it as well. I've got the paperback. I got it for Christmas last year.
I actually bought it as an iBook at the recommendation of somebody at work, actually, who's reading it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm so looking forward to it. One of my holiday reads.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to this.
It is fantastic. I've been reading that. I picked up a few things. I want to give a big shout out to. Look, I went to Supernova, Sydney.
Faux pas.
We'll just edit that bit out, David. I went to Supernova.
You went to the other Oz Comic Con.
Right? Yeah.
To the Comic Con in Oz.
In Oz. It was an Oz Comic Con, as it were.
Yeah.
it was Supernova. I only went one day this year because I had Sydney Film Festival stuff on the next day. And if you want to hear a bit of of a Sydney Film Festival update, go and listen to GMC this week, where Dave and I will talk a bit about what we saw.
Yeah.
And also last week's GMC, I spoke about the stuff I'd seen up to that day.
Mm.
Great day, amazing costumes. If you haven't seen the cosplay stuff, go check out behindthepanels.net. Lots of things there. But I picked up a few books there. I picked up The Adventures of Rudy Cool, which is a new one by Sourav Del Rio, who did Winter Cities. This is who did Zombie Cities.
Zombie Cities.
I'll talk about...
Faux pas.
I'll talk about, because I'm thinking the next thing I'm going to say is Winter City. This is Silver Fox Comics who are putting out... This is the all-ages one. So if you kind of looked at Zombie Cities before, and that's great, but I can't give that to my kid because it's a bit zombie and it's all a bit bitey. This one is great. This is kind of...
You can tell we've all been watching Buffy, can't you?
Yeah. It's either Buffy or I'm up to the second season of New Who, so it's all tight wibbly-wobbly. Yeah. New Doctor. But this one's an all-ages book, and it's got kind of sort of fun, almost Tintin-esque heist kind of... You know, there's a kind of like just fun sense to it. So definitely one to go check out online. Picked up the new Winter City stuff, but Winter City Productions, not only have they got issue 8 of Winter City out, they've also got 2 new books that have come out there by people like Paul Abstruse and Jason Franks as well. So go check out the Winter City website for those new books. There's Mechanical Knights is one of them. I have forgotten the name of the other one. I will mention it before the end of this thing guys are talking about it. So I picked up a lot of that sort of stuff, a lot of local press stuff. I ran into Ryan K. Lindsay there, who's got a few new things out at the moment. He's got a book called Headspace, and I mentioned this before. The first issue he's put out in print, and he said there's only going to be like 100 of those. So I picked up one of those. But if you want to get onto Comixology, get onto Monkey Brain Comics, this is how you get this book. It is really, really good, and it's had a really great reception
Excellent.
So far.
Okay.
This year, I've got to say, Supernova did something really good this year.
They brought Stan Lee out.
They brought Stan Lee out, and the line for this thing was going back to Strathfield.
Which, for the listeners that don't know,
live in Sydney, it was a long way. Actually, it seemed to be going back to the from the western suburbs to the eastern suburbs of Sydney at this point.
I think actually the line stretched all the way back to California, frankly.
Look, you can imagine.
He just crowd surfed back home.
Yeah. Going, hold me up, true believers.
if only I had Spider-Man's abilities.
It's actually funny. He has the proportional abilities and strength of a 91-year-old man.
Yes.
it's funny, and he keeps it all in his moustache.
Yeah.
That was obviously a big turnout for him. But what they did with Artist Alley this year, wasn't just the one and two rows that does like it. There was like 5 or 6 rows.
Oh, nice.
And that was all leading up to the signing area this year at the other end of the pavilion.
Oh, so people actually went there.
It was packed. From what I understand from the local guys, they were saying that... a lot more sales this year. They actually had fewer things to take home with them.
Because Artist Alley was always a wasteland.
It was. And so this year it was great to see that Supernova put a bigger focus on the artists there. It was a shame because I can't remember who it was mentioning on Facebook that it was a shame that whenever the popular media covers something like that, it's going like, look at all these people dressing up and they're here to get autographs signed, not mentioning the dozens and dozens and dozens of local creators who work all year so that they can present something as high quality as these trades like Rudy Cool and Winter City at a con like this where people wouldn't otherwise find it. You know, I mean, it's how we met people like the Winter City Boys and Paul Bedford and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Paul Bedford was one of the great finds.
Who we will be catching up with. Hello, Paul. I know you're
Hi,
listening.
Hi, Paul. We're back.
We will be catching up. I should say, Paul has been one of the most vocal people saying, when are you guys coming back?
Yeah.
So,
and we're back. Okay?
And he's threatened to do things to my body, which... I don't know whether I want to go to Melbourne.
Richard's already missing a couple of toes. You know?
I don't know how he got my toes to mail back to me.
In little boxes.
It was odd.
You need a toe? I'll get your toe.
He's flown to Sydney, cut my toes off, gone back to Melbourne and mailed them to me. It's very
dedication.
Weird.
It shows dedication. Okay.
So there's some of the things I've been doing in the last week or two. Boys, what have you been reading? There's some big titles
I'm going to throw out there. We've got some big titles out there. I actually read... The New Nancy Goes to Hell.
Yay!
Well, no, this is the big title for you.
Quite frankly, for those who haven't read it, it's an image book. It's kind of like the perverse, kind of dirty and grotty version of Buffy. It's basically about a cheerleader who finds herself in hell, has no idea why she's there, to later discover that she's actually dead. She died in a car crash. But because she is such a rough as guts chick, she just won't take the standing up. So she basically decides that she's going to get her way out of hell because she doesn't deserve to be there. Wills up a chainsaw because you can make anything you want in hell, and basically starts fighting her way through hell to meet and team up with Lucifer, who turns out to be a giant crybaby. Because apparently hell is built purely on the sorrow of Lucifer.
Okay, so we're putting this out here now. We've had a bad run of Halloween books. So this year...
I've been promoting this book for a while.
We'll have to do this one for Halloween. I guess that means next year we do the long Halloween for Halloween.
But we are going to do Nancy. There's two three-issue series. One's called Nancy in Hell, followed directly on by Nancy in Hell on Earth, where she manages to bring hell back to Earth. And then that all settled down, and it all disappeared for a while. This week, they released a Nancy in Hell one-shot out of nowhere. And it's actually a crossover with another indie title, Savage Dragon.
Yeah.
So the book is actually called Nancy in Hell, A Dragon in Hell. And basically, Savage Dragon is dragged to hell alive, not as a ghost, and teams up with Nancy to get him out because he's not supposed to be there. And it's a fun read. It's not as fun as the first two books. It does really feel kind of like a marketing thing for Savage Dragon more than anything else. But it is nice to have Nancy back again, and she's still as rough as Gus as ever.
That's cool.
Do have a look at it if you can. The other thing I read this week was World's Finest came out. Interestingly enough, I think they're wrapping World's Finest up. Now I don't know. I can't remember.
I have a weird feeling they are.
Because they keep talking about the fact that we're building up to Power Girl wanting to go home. And so I think she's going back to Earth 2 at some point, which means she might join Tom Taylor's.
Maybe that'll be, they'll call that Worlds v Justice.
Did you read last week, I think, Batgirl, the final page of Batgirl, has Batgirl and Canary teaming up for the first time in the Batgirl book. And then Huntress turns up going, "Hi, you don't know me."
Yes.
And it's kind of like, it's the classic Birds of Prey and by Simone.
And what I think is actually interesting is I think if my guess is going to be, my speculation is going to be, the Power Girl is going to go back to Earth 2 and she'll probably join Tom Taylor's book as a superpower, because they're going to need her because Superman's gone evil in that world.
Yep.
And I think Huntress will stay on Earth, and I think they're probably heading more towards a proper Birds of Prey.
And if we haven't mentioned before, Tom Taylor and Nicholas Scott's Earth 2, phenomenal.
It's a phenomenal book.
Just go and read this.
The other one I read, and I want to bring this up very quickly, is United States of Murder.
Oh, Brian Michael Bendis' book.
Brian Michael Bendis.
Issue 2 came out this week.
Yes, and I've read both of them. Brian Michael Bendis and Omig. Michael Omig.
The Powers team.
Now, this is a really good book. It's really well written. It's really top notch. It's kind of almost a pseudo world where the mafia runs everything. But it's kind of our world at the same time. So it's kind of an interesting mix of the two things. Mm. And basically the plot is revolving around the fact that this new made man has been sent to send a message to a senator. And at that message being delivered, there's an explosion and the senator is killed. Yes. And now it's basically set everything on fire because the old counter mobs are all basically saying, "Why did they kill the senator?" And he's saying, "We didn't kill the senator." And so it's all about
he delivered like a briefcase.
That's right. It was just a message. It was a dead bird or something like that. And basically the whole idea is them trying now to figure out who killed the senator before they unleash all war amongst everything.
I like that, because Powers, the first story, was a murder mystery.
Yes. And that brings me to the one criticism of the book. So I really enjoyed it, but because of the artwork, because of the style of it, which is a made man being teamed up with a female partner, a female hitman, it feels like Powers. It almost is too close.
Well, look, you know, dudes just announced that Powers series is coming to PlayStation at the end of the year.
PlayStation Network.
Network at the end of the year. So it's possible he's positioning himself for another series.
Yeah, and that
Mafia is hot right now.
Well, absolutely. And on that note, Powers Bureau, which is the current season of Powers, has actually gotten really strong again. So I've actually caught up on that as well. That's really good.
I'm going to catch up on Powers certainly by, I think, December.
You've got a long way to go, dude.
I've got till December. You've
got, three volumes?
Back when we were doing this originally as a weekly, we decided to do all of Buffy season 8.
That's true. In
a week or two.
That's true.
We can do this.
Absolutely.
That's back when we did massive runs of Spider-Man.
They've just wrapped up season 9, haven't they?
I think they're just starting season 10.
I think we might need to do season 9. Dave Longo, what have you been reading?
I guess I'm going to be the guy that talks about the big two, hey?
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
I've been
see how we plan this out? I did an event. David did some indies. You're doing the big two. I did the big two.
Yeah. Well, we got Original Sin and Future's End. Which one should we do first?
Let's do Original Sin because I've got a little bit of grounding on that.
Okay. Yeah. How do you go with Original Sin, Dave?
I've enjoyed what I've read so far. I'm a little bit evented out. So it doesn't really matter how good the event is. I think I'm a little bit evented out.
I think so. I mean, look, it's the reality of comics. It's going to be event after event after event, but... This one, I'm a little jaded about this one because...
But the problem is Marvel's not even giving us time to breathe nowadays. When you think about it...
Yeah, it's the weekly release schedule as well, which is really...
Well, yeah, and you think about the major events of the past. You think about things like Civil War and Siege. We actually got time after each event to see what the repercussions of that event were, and then they'd have the next event to continue on.
This week, not only did we get Original Sin... Confusingly, there's another book called Original Sins.
Don't talk to me about Original Sins.
And then there's also all the Original Sin tie-ins.
Original Sins is just a collection of like barely one-shot like mini stories.
Right. I mean, that's...
It was just like, what am I reading here?
It's I just feel like
the cover has every single Marvel hero on it. And then it's like, featuring Deathlock. And you're like, oh, God.
The one thing I will give Original Sin that I've really enjoyed...
The main run is awesome, though.
I haven't been reading any of the tie-ins. I've just been reading the main run. And I will say it's really nice to see Original Nick Fury back and doing something. He's acting as a detective in this. And I really am enjoying that.
And we have got to see the flying car.
The forfeit. Yeah, there's a great reveal about Nick Fury.
Yeah, the fourth issue's out this week. Again, murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Any comic book with a villain that wears the Watcher's eyeball as a head is in my book.
When they reveal him, it's kind of like, Z-grade hit villain. Just change the world.
And
I like that.
And that's because, like, for me, it's like, you know, we're talking about this event, like... What's the word for it? Too many events.
Eventitis.
Yeah, eventitis. Yeah. That's good. That's a good one, actually.
I got myself a case of eventitis.
Yeah, like, but the cool thing about this is it's not like that Jonathan Hickman eventitis. You know, like, it's not like you have to read a million other comics to understand what's going on.
You don't have to.
This is just eight. It's not related to the rest of the Marvel U. The X-Men don't feature.
Yeah, but I think we can all agree that Hickman is too intelligent for his own good.
Well, we like Hickman.
I mean, Hickman's okay, but boy, he gets deep.
But this is just Jason Aaron just... going deep in another way. We all love Jason Aaron and his
eyeballs
craziness.
Eyeballs deep, apparently, yeah. Sorry.
You just said eyeballs deep.
I did. Yeah.
Future's End, briefly.
I might cut that out.
Yeah,
no, I won't.
Whatever.
No, you will not.
Future's End.
Futures End, tell us about it. Futures End is one of those ones where I read the first issue and I haven't gone back.
Well, in the first two issues, they killed off Green Arrow, so I'm like, well, to hell with this.
There's nothing to talk about. Let's move on.
Oh, really? That good, huh? Wow.
I don't know.
Picking up on what you said before, which the weekly schedule of these is too much.
This is exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Exactly 100%. That's what's ruining Future's End for me, is the weekly dropping of it, where it just makes it feel so inconsequential. It's just like, all right.
To me, because by the time we get to September, which we'll mention in here, in September they're dropping... they're doing what they do every year, and like there's going to be like a line-wide series of one-shots with the 3D covers. What they did last year, there was a Villains Month last year, wasn't it? And then the year before, the Zero Issues.
Villains Month, that's right.
There's Villains Month last year. It was the Zero Issues the year before that. And the year before that, it was the launch of the New 52. So this year, it's the Future's End stuff. So it'll be like, a story 5 years from now, all of the major titles.
But you know what's so funny about this is Marvel did this a few years back with The End, and they had all of the end titles.
But no, DC did this a few years back.
Well,
so
there's that.
Like, everyone's on this. Let's face it, with DC, we're 75 years into their run. So everything, there's not a lot they haven't done before. But I mean, Grant Morrison always says, you can always find new stories. There's new spins on new stories. And the fact that, you get things like All-Star Superman and whatnot, that is an interesting... Even the book we're doing this week is an interesting take on old archetypes,
I just want a story for once. It doesn't have to do this, but I just want it to feel like it could. Change the landscape for once.
Yes.
Like, develop the characters for once. Every single event lately... This is why Original Sin, in my opinion, is refreshing, because every single event starts with, time travel.
But this is what...
The people from the future are here in the present.
As soon as you put time travel into it,
I get it. Eventually, I'm going to get to the end of this. And like, as you said before,
what's frustrating, though?
The death of Wolverine. Oh, well, here we go.
What's frustrating, though, is that when they do have an event which could change the landscape of everything, and yes, you could argue it did because they launched the New 52 straight after it, but that wasn't, I think, what was going to happen. But the point is that Flashpoint,
yeah,
they actually said when Flashpoint started, they said, this is not an alternate reality. This is not an Elseworld story. What happens in Flashpoint, the repercussions will be real.
It's permanent. Yeah.
And they said it'll be permanent. That's all great, except as soon as Flashpoint ended, what do they do? Oh, end of the DC Universe, start the New 52. Yeah. So we didn't really get repercussions from Flashpoint.
Well, yeah, we don't get anything.
We didn't get anything. It ended. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like you copped out on us completely.
You know? You don't even need to develop them much. Even something little would be nice. You know, yeah. I'd like to see an event where it's like Wolverine has a birthday, or like it's like, can you imagine that? Like,
yes,
like it's the birthday year where every character ages 1 year, and it's just
book,
like it's every issue that they get is a birthday party.
Can I tell you that that book exists? That book is
Does
called
it?
Hawkeye.
Right.
No, I mean it's like a literal birthday.
No, I'm talking like, about I'm talking about literal.
And
Hawkeye is a book where just mundane things happen.
No, I'll pitch it right now to you guys. The event's called Party at the X Mansion. Everybody shows up, they get really drunk, they sleep around.
I've seen that film.
hear me out. They wake up the next morning, the mansion's just destroyed.
I've had that dream.
And they don't know what's happened.
There you go.
I mean,
was it the Hangover with the X-Men?
Yeah,
character?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Take all my money.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. See, I could write for Marvel Comics. Like,
what did we get up to last night?
What do you mean all the titles can't be Marvel Max? Are you sure? Why not?
Do you know what I want? Speaking of Marvel Max, I want a new Howard the Duck series.
I want a Punisher that is good.
That's what you do. The next morning, Wolverine wakes up in bed with Howard the Duck. And they have to work out how this all happened.
How the hell they got there, yeah.
That would be an amazing story, man.
Yeah,
it would be amazing.
And you spend a year working out.
Yeah. Marvel, are you listening?
Yeah, seriously.
They're probably not.
No, they're probably
not. Like, we should fire Adam McKay and get these guys.
Yeah, when we reboot Howard the Duck for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
No, we could make a great Howard the Duck movie.
Oh, yeah.
We could.
We could, because you stick closer to the Max series and you're in business.
Yeah, and you got, but the only thing you maintain is the saxophone music. That has to stay.
Oh, yeah, John Barry's score has to stay.
And I want Steve Buscemi as Howard the Duck. Right, I'm just putting that out there.
No, we'll write comics how they wrote Jaws. The characters show up, they fight, the end.
Should we do
I think this is what you were referring to. Where is it? Huh?
Oh.
Here you go. As long as we keep this in Howard the Duck, we're in business.
Howard, how did we get here, Bob?
Here it comes.
Coming. Oh,
and that's
this
enough
summer.
Of that.
Oh, ducky.
A duck named Howard.
Should we do some news?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do a bit of this then.
DC will debut The Multiversity, the Society of Superheroes, Conquerors of the Counterworld number 1 by Grant Morrison in September this year, spinning out of Morrison's Multiversity event.
DC September will be dominated by a series of Futures End 3D covered one-shots, as it is mentioned, for most of their major titles.
Superman Unchained, The Adventures of Superman, and Injustice Gods Among Us Year 2 will also come to an end in September.
The Death of Wolverine, arrives in Marvel's September solicitations, killing off their biggest cash cow. No, really not going to happen. A new event from Charles Soule and artist Steve McNevin.
Image Comics will debut 4 new series in September. Roche Limit, Copperhead, God Hates Astronauts.
He really does.
And Oddly Normal.
I hate astronauts too. Quentin Tarantino will co-plot a Django and Zorro crossover with Matt Wagner for Dynamite.
Speaking of multiversity, Spider-Man event Edge of the Spider-Verse will also kick off with a mini-series in September.
Of the Spider-Verse!
September is looking very full.
Rosario Dawson has been added to the cast of Marvel's Daredevil for Netflix in an undisclosed role.
John Spates, best known for scripting Prometheus, is reportedly being hired to take on the Scott Derrickson-helmed Doctor Strange for Marvel.
Interesting. Weta Workshop's Pakeko Pictures and the Heavy Metal brand are developing an animated series based on the cheeky series Rat Queens from Image Comics.
The U.S. Supreme Court may take up the case of Lisa Kirby versus Marvel to determine whether works produced by Jack Kirby and published by Marvel between 1958 and 1963 were work for hire.
Interesting. Finally, Marvel and the Florida Department of Citrus are ready to strike a reported $1 million deal to redesign the department's mascot, Captain Citrus.
Oh, dear.
Oh. Yeah, and I want to see that. And then Frank Miller takes the book on. And makes
I want to know if Captain Citrus is going to wear a little sash around the waist. Or carry a shield.
You squeeze his skin and it gets in your eyes.
Captain Citrus, belted by sunshine rays, turned into grapefruit. Amy Young.
Oh dear!
You could have like a giant truck with those like juices on the front of it.
Can we just talk about September for a minute? Is anybody going to have time to breathe?
I know. Between that and Captain Citrus, you know what you need, David. An icy cold glass of orange juice.
There you go.
Actually, no, we're talking about events coming all out at once. That my favorite story was not in there because it wasn't headline worthy, but the fact that Marvel are actually trolling DC so hard with that by releasing their own 3D cover only on one book, which is the Deadpool book.
Of course it is.
And that's brilliant. I love that. That is the kind of cheeky rivalry that DC and Marvel used to have.
Mm.
And this is one of the things. I liked it when DC and Marvel used to be friendly competitors.
You know?
And it's kind of like you got the cheeky pot shots at each other. And they still do that to some extent. But now it's all about building these events and stuff. It's kind of, you've lost some of the joy of those things when you used to have the Marvel, bullpen and all that sort of stuff.
I think you just summed it up, though. I think that's the problem with the major two at the moment is they seem to both have lost a bit of joy, and that's not across the board. There are select titles.
Harley Quinn came out this week from DC, which is one of the most joyful books you're ever going to read.
Absolutely, Harley Quinn on that side. You've got the before mentioned Hawkeye on the other side. I mean, you've got books that are standout titles. Don't get me wrong. And Daredevil has a lot of joy going by. And Daredevil's a fantastic.
Go back to
well.
Issue one of Wade's Daredevil, and it's like the most joyful Daredevil
absolutely.
You've ever seen.
Absolutely. But on the most part, they just seem to both be a little bit soulless at the moment.
There is a trend in comics and comic book films. Everything's got to be serious. And we saw this in the Dark Knight films.
Yeah.
It was like the most serious. I don't even think anybody cracked a smile for more than half a second in any of those movies. There's hardly any jokes beyond, I wear hockey pants, rah, rah, rah.
Actually, funnily enough.
Whenever Bane speaks.
Yeah.
Batman Begins has that one moment in it where he buys the hotel because the girls are floating around
in the
water.
There was plenty of humor in this film.
Are you laughing with me or at me?
Bane?
What's that, David?
I was about to say, there's that scene in Batman Begins where the girls are frolicking in the fountain of the hotel and he buys the hotel.
I enjoy a good frolic.
And you had that little moment, you sit there and go, oh, look, there's a little bit of levity, but gone. What are you doing?
That's fine.
But no, you know what I want to see? I want to see
which is why we were excited by Ant-Man, the whole the take on it, which was going to be Edgar Wright's take on it. I mean, they've got two people who are famous for comedies. Peyton Reed and Adam McKay are involved in this film. So obviously they're looking at a comedic take.
And Feige has actually said that a lot of Edgar Wright and Cornish's script
is still there. I mean, in Guardians, looks like it's going for a comedy streak as well. So,
but the thing is, what I would like to see is I'd like to see some of the joy and some of the fun of the Marvel Cinematic Universe at the moment reflect back into the comics.
Exactly, because the Guardians book, even though it has gotten a little bit cheekier under Bendis, the first 10 issues or so were very serious.
Mm.
And I'd like to, I'd like to see a little bit of the old Abnett and Lanning, the DNA humor creeping back in across the board.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's the thing. I mean, when we talk about these events, these big monolithic events, not having room to breathe afterwards, it's because I didn't get a sense of, like at the end of it, I felt like, wow, that might have been great, but whoo, it took it out of me, you know. That was, I just went to three funerals, you know, that's back to back, you know. I think I need to go to a wedding or something.
There's only so many issues.
A year of weddings.
There's only so many issues.
Yeah, see, yeah, that's year two.
That's year two.
Of the party events.
Yeah. And then and the year after that, everyone gives birth. You know?
Hey, how about some of the X-Men actually get degrees?
Oh, yeah.
think about the cheeky Amanda Connor cover for the Green Arrow wedding.
It's
this beautiful cover where he's got the little suction cup arrow stuck to her butt and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. You know, he's thinking, why aren't we seeing more of that? Why aren't we seeing some more joy in this? You know,
The fact that they did the Green Arrow wedding as an event,
yes,
you know, across in a different, you know, and that was nice. It was,
it led to divorce, of course, but that's beside the point.
Well, yes, but you know, Ollie can't keep it in his pants.
Well, that's true.
You know, that's what happens when you get shafted. Over here. Should we do this week's book?
Oh, if you insist.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Watch the skies coming at you. A hero of metal hue. He locks horns with disaster for the red and white and blue. Then was born of a robot. Miracle of science. Ready to battle large monsters. Supercharged and quick on the claw.
Did you know that there was an animated series in the late 90s?
I did not know that.
Based on the book we're doing this week, of course, is Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot by Frank Miller. You may have heard of him. And
or it could have been called The Big Guy and That Other Thing.
Another thing, yeah. and also the amazing, amazing, amazing artist Jeff Darrow, who you're probably familiar with if you're familiar with him from things like Shaolin Cowboy. He worked with Frank Miller on another book called Hard Boiled, which is also excellent, definitely worth picking up. And we'll probably do that at some stage as well, because I think we're going to go through all of Frank Miller's books.
An interesting writer because as you pointed out, there's three different Frank Millers.
There's three different Frank Millers. There's Frank Miller who did The Dark Knight Returns, which is, and Year One, which are arguably two of the greatest comic books ever written, full stop. Mm. There is the Frank Miller who did a book that we started this year off with, which is The Dark Knight Strikes Again, which is arguably one of the weirdest books ever written, and not in a good way. And then there is the Frank Miller who did this, which is originally appeared across in a bunch of different formats. I think it originally appeared in a single kind of like one-shot type things in the back pages of what was it? It first turned up in Mike Allred's Madman book.
Oh, okay.
And then let me just check my notes, which was a Dark Horse book, and it was part of their now defunct Legend imprint, according to the Wikipedia entry page. Then it got these two large format books in '96, which is what we're reading here, and they've been collected together as a thing. And then the character turned up in Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons' Martha Washington Stranded in Space. I don't know if you know of his Martha Washington.
I've actually not seen that one, no.
but there's also in Sin City, Hell and Back, the big guy turns up as well.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and I don't know what capacity. So
this is actually my first experience with this character.
Yeah, so he's turned up in a few different places, and then there was this Fox Kids animated series.
Which I am like, so going to go
and this find. And this is the era that we were seeing Fox Kids doing stuff like the Sam and Max animated series, and as you reminded me, the Tick, which also became its own thing with a live action. Yeah, I mean, it's probably where most of us were introduced to Patrick Warburton,
yes.
And who will be forever grateful for that fact. This the animated series kind of picks up where this leaves off, but this book is a little kind of. It's interesting that we did Godzilla last week on GMC, and then we do this because this is very much inspired by. I mean, Frank Miller has a love of Japan, and you know this because he did. You often forget it, but he does. He did things like Ronin, which was this terrific book.
The Claremont Wolverine
and the Claremont Wolverine. Yeah. You know, there's this very strong connection that he's had with Japan over the years, and this is kind of feeding on two things. One of them is that Japanese monster movie thing.
Yes, very much so.
Which is something that Darrow excels at art-wise. We'll talk about his art in a little bit more detail in a moment. But also the fact that the very much Miller's American imperialism.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. This is American imperialism at its worst. I mean, because at its core, what you have is you have the monster.
It's a parody, though. We should say it's a parody. It's very
the problem with if it, I would have said it was a parody. Until I found out it was written by Frank Miller. You know what I mean?
That's the problem.
Because Miller is very right-wing. And I think what you've got is you've got a very thinly veiled parody of Astro Boy.
And yes, so basically, very much.
Rusty the Boy Robot. And you've got these big monsters coming in destroying Tokyo, and they send Rusty the Robot in, and Rusty the Robot can't cut it. And so what do they have to do? They call on America, who send in... I mean, we're not just talking about sending in, like, you know, America coming to save the day. They send in the big guy.
They send in,
you know,
the bomb, basically.
They send in the bomb. And in fact, one of the first shots of him coming in, he's carrying two A-bombs, you know?
Which he throws up the nose of this Godzilla creature. We basically say the basic plot is that at the start of it, the Japanese scientists have messed with nature and created something, some sort of entity.
Well, and it turns out that the dinosaurs weren't what we thought they were. They were actually some sort of demonic monster, and they've reawoken them. And look, the artwork is spectacular, and the book is actually quite fun. It's really lightweight, but it is very fun. And but I just couldn't wrap my head around really how much Miller is basically saying, we'll look after you because we're America.
You know, I'm still not sure. That's the charm for me.
I'm sitting on the fence. I mean, yes, I can see that because this is Frank Miller. I'll give you that. But also the fact that it is so cheeky. The way that it does it is almost sort of saying, yes, America will come in and save you. And you know, the Japanese are so deferential, going, oh, thank you. We wouldn't have made it out without it, you. And sort of thing. He doesn't tend to be quite that obvious with... I mean, he is. Yes, he is obvious, but he doesn't tend to be quite as obvious.
It walks a very fine line
actually
to being
racist. He actually refers to it as, you know, there's conversations having, oh, yeah, America's coming in to save us and so forth. And, yeah, it is a bit of that. But I suspect it's more how he thinks America views itself rather than... This is all pre-9/11, keeping in mind.
Very true.
So this is more how he sees America viewing... And Miller's version of America is different post-9/11 to what it was pre-9/11.
This is a time capsule.
This is, yeah, very much so. I'm on the fence with Dave, but I think that it's more leaning towards him... Frank Miller in a good mood, almost, you know.
Dave, what did you think?
You know, for kids.
I really like what you said at the beginning of your comment about how if Frank Miller didn't write this, I would have been more, you know, in love with it.
Yeah, it would have been more of a parody.
Like my exact experience, because the two guys here, they gave me the comic. They bought it for me. And when I picked it up, I flicked through it and went, oh man, the artwork is amazing.
And it is.
And then one of you said, look who wrote it. And it said Frank Miller and I. And then I flicked through again and went, uh-oh. You know, like, yeah. And when I read it, I didn't know it was pre-9/11.
No, actually, neither did I. I actually thought it was something new.
Yeah, I thought it was a direct comment on America's... Yeah, but anyway, like I really like it.
I should really do more research before I read my books.
Yeah, because on surface, it's just a kick-ass, like, kind of like Toho, you know, giant monsters... Like Astro Boy, you know, that kind of stuff. But then, if you want to go deeper, which it might not even be that deep, you might get into some extremely racist caricatures. I mean, if you read it that way, like every Japanese person looks the same,
pretty much,
like the same.
And but it's kind of like, I mean, I think it's something like, but there is something with Darrow's art. But if you've read something like Shaolin Cowboy, the latest series of Shaolin Cowboy, literally, and I'm not joking around. He did this thing, and it was phenomenal experiment because the first series is like batshit crazy, in a good way. His new series of Shaolin Cowboy, he has three or four issues in a row where it's just the Shaolin Cowboy fighting through sea of zombies. Like the whole page is just zombies, if you've seen Darrow's artwork, it's like he uses every square inch of the page, and everything's detailed. And it's like for three or four issues in a row, it's almost wordless, him just fighting through this slew of zombies. And it's this kind of, for him, I think almost the repetition is cinematic. And it's kind of like he's almost seeing every movement in his head as it's happening. And there is something to that. I take your point, Dave. I don't think it's deliberate on the part of Darrow. Mm.
I just want to be clear. I'm still not sure if it's deliberate on Miller's part.
You know,
like if it is a parody, as you say, which it definitely could be, then it will be like a Team America. Like,
this
would be obvious.
This feels more like.
But you don't know if it's obvious.
Well, this feels more like a collaboration to me. That's why I say it, because it feels, having read a bunch of Darrow's other stuff, having read their other collaboration, Hard Boiled, which is won the Eisner Award back in 1991. It's a great book. We definitely need to do that later on. And then this was their next collaboration. But having read, you know, his Shaolin Cowboy stuff, which still turns up in in other things as well, like Dark Horse Presents. Like, he's got a long standing history with that. Having read all those things, and Nima, who's been on the show a bunch of times, introduced me to Jeff Darrow, to Darrow's work, and in fact, quite literally introduced me to Jeff Darrow, gave me his email address, and I've been communicating with him.
It's not surprising that Nima likes this as well, because this is very similar, not style wise, but very similar. Well, I was thinking 2000 AD, Judge Dredd.
It's got the 2000 AD.
Packed in super detail.
But also, you look at Mobius's stuff like that. Seth Fisher has a very similar style. The late Seth Fisher has a very similar style. Not to this extent. But to me, this big guy and Rusty the Boy Robot feels more like a collaboration, because it feels to me more like Darrow than it does Miller. And that's why I wonder. And I don't actually know the story, and I should have done a bit more research into this, and if Nima was here, he'd be able to tell us. It almost feels like this was done the Marvel method. You know what I mean?
Whereas he drew it, and then Miller's filled it in.
The placement of some of those bubbles and some of the dialogue that comes out of that feels like, you know, that really old Stan Lee way of, you know,
you're
what
right.
I mean?
Actually, I can actually feel that. Yeah, it feels like the story was added post.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's true or not, so if I could be talking out of turn, but that's what I mean. It feels very organic in that sense. Mm. And it does have that sense of Miller's kind of chaotic story writing. Because I remember when I was reading Dark Knight Strikes Again, I got lost between panels. You know, I didn't understand what the story was between panel one and panel two. So it's a similar sort of story here sometimes. Like, I actually read this sometimes and I kind of felt as though too much was happening, or like, you know, there's a lot of information coming out.
That's the thing. It's like it's that Japanese media thing. It's like if you don't sort of understand that, then you might want you might read this really incorrectly.
Yes,
because it reads to me as an ode to anime. You know, like, everything is yelled, everything is fast paced. Like, that's one of the core elements to Japanese media. Like,
yeah.
And the weird element to it though is that if Frank Miller was anti anime, then you could read it as like him making fun of that kind of media. But I don't think he does. I think
funny thing is, I don't think it's a parody.
I don't think so either.
I think it's just, he's telling a straight story. And yeah.
Really?
No, I don't think it. I think it is telling a straight story. But I love the fact that there's so much going on in this panel that the description has to be an arrow.
Yeah.
Pointing to Big Guy on 54.
I mean, sorry, no, I don't know how you can't say this is a parody when you got dialogue like, fight with all my wits, with all my strength, eternal pain with no sweet release of death, fight! You know, I mean, come on. The monster is this kind of like tortured. Like, the monster has most of the dialogue.
But the thing is, what is he parodying though? That's the thing, because like, if he's parodying like Japanese culture and he's parodying like you know, Toho and Godzilla and monster, that's fine. But if on the other hand he's also making a commentary about American politics and how America influences and, you know, uses its power over other nations, then it's a different story. Because I'm not talking about like how racist the book is.
Right.
I'm talking about like what Miller's saying about American politics, which is the weird element to it.
I really got out of this book, you know, he's saying that America's there to protect you.
Yeah, because you can't protect yourself.
That's right.
Yeah,
came up with was a little tiny little robot, and we got the big guy. Yeah.
You look at, like, geographically, like, Japan is this small little thing, and, you know, America is this huge,
who historically have a parental relationship, military-wise, since the Second World War.
Correct.
With the U.S. It's basically, They don't really have a military of their own. It's
all because of the army.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Army base is there.
It's the same stuff that Godzilla deals with. It's exactly the same.
Look, overall, I actually enjoyed the book.
I actually really love this stuff.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
This is my sense of humor. This is what I like.
I did enjoy it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Mm. It was a very light read. I literally read it in one sitting.
Yeah, same.
Sitting on a train, and I thought it was a lot of fun. Mm. I look at it and go, if you dig a little bit deeper, when you start scratching the surface a little bit, you start going,
Yeah.
that's what
makes it really interesting.
Yeah, right? It is. And it really is.
Because it's not offensive in its...
No, things. And that's the funny thing, like, is, as I say, it's borderline racist. You know, it's borderline American imperialism. It's borderline everything. But it's like, you sit there and go, but you get away with it. You kind of get away with it to a point.
My problem is that whole image of post-Dark Knight Strikes Again Frank Miller.
Yeah.
You know, of like that, like we talked about this when we did Dark Knight Strikes Again. Do you remember where, like, it was that idea that he was hunched down on the table with the whiskey in the one hand, like staining the paper, and his cheek was rested on the bottom of the page,
like that, right?
And he was like drawing with like his eyes half closed. You know, like, that's the impression.
We've got the book here finishes with, you know, Rusty the Boy Robox saying that he's going to team up with him as his kid's sidekick.
Yeah, know? Which of course, and big guy's going, yeah, get away from
me. Yeah, get away from me. but it's because they've been summoned to, Mayday, Mayday, calling big guy, an alien spacecraft has landed in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and it's up to some fierce mischief. Hurry, big guy, we're losing our cows. And which I think is great. But then the animated series picks up almost immediately after that. And if you don't mind, I'll play a quick clip of where the animated series starts up.
Ziel aufgefasst. Jeder verfehlte Schuss geht auf Kosten des Steuerzahlers.
Sorry, that was the German version.
Well, that brings the
imperialism
the imperialism to a whole new level. I think you should leave it at that.
I actually found it. Here we go. I think this is the right one. No, that's the wrong one as well. I was watching this before, but oh dear,
that's awesome.
Okay,
well, that's what I've always said.
It turns out
I've always said there are some things that are better in German. Starship Troopers is better in German. This apparently is too.
Oh dear.
Moving right along.
I'll try that again. We might have to edit some of
bloody
this.
Bloody hell! Bloody hell!
Come on, Richard.
Oh God, I hope this is in English.
Weapon locked. Precision counts. A wasted shot costs taxpayers dearly. Bullseye. Here comes company. Spry Devil. Operating systems jammed. Time to go low tech.
So anyway, you get the idea. That's what the big guy sounds like.
I was about to say, does he sound a lot like Kevin Conroy to anybody
he
else?
He does a bit, yeah.
Good sound effects.
It was good sound effects. Look, that's actually not available on DVD as far as I know, but you can find them online, and it really should be available on DVD because there's more comics coming out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find them in German if you
want. I'm going to go watch all of it in German. And I'll cut some of that out. No, I won't.
You probably won't, bastard.
he'll extend it.
I'm going to go find the entire German one and just put the entire German one in. Right in the middle of the show.
Schweinhund. So until next week. Okay, quick roundup before we push on and say tell people where they can find us on the internet in English and German. We'll do this bilingual. What do we all think? So basically we're recommending this as a
curiosity? I do recommend it. I think it's also a very interesting time capsule of Frank Miller's life as well. So I think it is a very interesting book to have a look at. The big guy.
I reckon it's way better than Dark Knight Strikes Again.
I would concur.
But I loved it.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Richard?
Grosser Mann and Rusty Decliner Robot. something like that. I really love it. It's my sense of humor. I really love that kind of, and I love the artwork in this as well.
The artwork is staggering. It's worth owning the trade.
The trade, because it's a big oversized book, and it's definitely how it needs to be read. Also, as I said, check out Hard Boiled if you haven't already. So,
which I haven't, so I'm going to look for that.
Definitely going to look at that. It's one I've been meaning to read for years, and so this was, as always, this show is an excuse to read that stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't think we've decided what we're going to do next week. We didn't plan this in any way, shape,
Spider
or form.
We're not doing Spider Island.
Can I throw out a personal request at some point?
Oh, go on.
At some point, not necessarily next week, but we really got to do Daredevil. Kevin Smith's
Guardian Devil. We've done a lot of Daredevil.
That's what I'm not right now, but I really want to do it because I bought the trade.
Let's do Jason Aaron Scalped.
Oh, let's do the first trade of Jason Aaron Scalped.
Okay.
Scalped. Okay, so we're doing Jason Aaron Scalped. It's a Vertigo title. The whole thing's out in trade at the moment, so you can easily get those.
Yep.
You can get them on...
is that? That's about the first 8 issues or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. So look up Volume 1 of Scalped. I've actually read Volume 1 of Scalped, so I'm going to go back and reread that. Really good book. It's kind
cool. I haven't read it. So
yeah, it's like, it's like a modern Western set on a Native American reservation. It's quite cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a CIA agent goes undercover as a Native American in a reservation.
Yes.
I think.
Cool. So someone goes undercover. Thunderheart.
Someone goes, yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
But it's Jason Aaron, so it's going to be hard, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least it's not Jonathan Hickman.
It would take more than 8 issues to tell the story.
Yeah. Okay, so that's next week, we say confidently.
There will be a show next week.
That'll be episode 99, but then there will actually be a break because we'll be in Melbourne and hopefully confirming the last of our exciting guests.
Mm.
For I've been in contact with one of the big two.
And when you say last, you mean the first, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I've been in contact with the publicity department of one of the big two who very nicely got back to me and have offered me some interview opportunities, which we're finalising the details of now, I hope. So if I get one of my requests, we could have a big name to announce very, very shortly. Otherwise, we're just going to make it up as we go along for the 100th.
We'll have your German counterpart.
Richard Grau will be presenting.
I'm going to go out and find a German co-host just so we can have a German.
I know a few people who speak German. So until next week, I am Richard Grau. You can find me on Twitter, Alf DVD Bits. You can find me online, Alf, therealbits.com. That's the T, Jesus, I forgot. What's my website again? TheRELBits.com or behindthepanels.net.
And I'm David McVeigh, and you can find me at Twitter at David McVeigh or on Facebook, David McVeigh or Geek Actually or at geekactually.com.
I'm going to remember how to do the show by next week.
That's right. I've always forgotten where I come from.
Well, see what happens, Dave, when a man and a woman really love it.
Yeah, you buy them from the baby shop, right?
Something to do with stalks and cabbage patches. That's all. As far as I got, don't
care. If you follow
care.
Pixar movies, some storm cloud, too.
Isn't it today you have to do a BuzzFeed quiz and then they align, like, you know, what your baby will look like? I'm Dave Longo. You can find me at Dave Longo on Twitter.
Wow.
Because I don't care about... Yeah, because the websites are websites that are on the internet.
You can find me.
Websites are generally found on the internet.
The average
this
click
went south so fast.
I can't believe people are spending more than 5 seconds on my website.
Richard, take us home, man.
Scroll us down to the end to read what we give ourselves out of 10. Come on.
I've lost care. Until next week, when we'll be presenting entirely in English. Probably not.
TLDR.
I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
TLDR.
And this has been, probably, Behind the Panels.